Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest, and I've felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Trends represent worldviews.
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh. Well, the mail might be a little delayed here on Wretched Radio because I stumbled into an article that reminds us that trends in culture represent worldviews. Whenever you see something big going on, just a lot of people getting into something, it's usually not by chance. It's usually because there is a worldview behind it. And most often, it's the world system behind it. The world system that is corrupted with lies, deception, false promises, anti-God, anti-Christian. The world system is anything that is contrary to God, that sets itself up against the Bible. That's the world system. And almost always, when you see a trend in our culture, it's because that world system somehow is informing it. For instance, you see diet products everywhere. Well, where did that come from? I think it comes from a culture that tends to be obsessed with skinny, not gaining weight. And so you have a slew of diet products. Why do we see so many dark movies in our movie theaters? We were at an outdoor mall the other night walking by the movie theater, and I think it was like it had 12, 14, 82 screens, whatever it was. And I said to Mrs. Friel, let's just walk by and see how many of these are creepy. Seriously, it was like 8 or 10 of them were just dark. Well, why? Was it just luck that so many movies had to do with blood or death or vampires? Or no, it's because the culture is interested in dark things, and it's manifested on movie screens. Why do we see electric cars? Well, because so many people are loving the mother. We don't want to hurt the planet in any way, shape, or form. So not only do you have marketers and mass production of vehicles, but you got an audience that's willing to buy them. Because it's all about not using gasoline, putting carbon into the universe, blowing a hole in it. No, it's not for everybody, and I'm not dissing any of these things. Well, the dark movies I'm not nuts about. Not dissing any of it. I'm just saying it represents something. Vodi Bakum is in Africa. He is trying to build a Christian university, and the purpose of it is to demonstrate to a culture that isn't as, I'll just use rightly understood, as civilized, meaning as organized as well as it could be for the benefit of people. Vodi talks a lot about how in America, the culture that was informed a lot by Christian precepts and values, even though most Americans don't walk, you see sidewalks everywhere. Where he is in Africa, everybody walks and you don't see sidewalks. In America, we want to get to the other side of the river. What do? We build a bridge. And we come up with architectural design. You make sure that it has architectural integrity. It's pleasing to the eye. It handles this much traffic. It has a sidewalk on the side of it. In Africa, in at least where, not every place, certainly, but in many places, you don't see a building of bridges. You'll maybe see a vine from a tree, and you swing it from one side to the other, and you pull yourself over on a rope. Why? Because Christians have a worldview that informs how we do stuff. That people are really way more important than animals, and people are more important than the planet. And so you see, even architecture represents a worldview. When you take a look at modern art, why does it look the way that it does? Granted, art changes over the years, but there used to be some basic principles and precepts to art. It used to be done in alignment to rightly represent God's creation, that things would be done in an orderly fashion, a mathematical fashion, so that things actually appeared the way they are. And they were supposed to be beautiful or instructive. Now, modern, so much of it, the angles and the shot, it's like, well, what is that? You can't even have a room on that building there because it's just, it comes together so severely that you can't even, and it's just therefore designed to give an angle that is not aesthetically pleasing. It has an overall impression of more like, that doesn't really look like it fits together, but I guess it works. Why? Because we're not trying to represent God in our architecture or in our art. That's why Impressionist art started to become what it is. It was really starting to feel the effects of a postmodern worldview, questioning of truth. Things are not as clear as you think they are. They're a little bit fuzzier. Well, we've moved from Monet, where it's a little bit fuzzy and blurred, and now it's just a bucket of paint thrown against the wall, and what does it say to you? That represents a worldview. Music, you can go on, and feel you are. It represents a worldview. To the article. Sorry, parents. Nobody wants the family heirlooms. This is from a website called apartmenttherapy.com. And this person, it's a woman who wrote the article. I think it's a secular website. Basically, sharing what I think a lot of us have observed. That it seems that this latest generation, we all know it's different, don't we? Isn't every generation different than the last? Isn't it? You go from one form of music, what's the kids with the music? The generations are always different. There's nothing wrong with that. But one of the trends that we've seen in this generation, or at least that I've observed, is how young people don't really care. Not everybody, but as a rule, they don't really care about family heirlooms. They don't care about inheriting stuff from mom and dad. From Forbes magazine, inside of the article, they commented on this trend. Sorry, nobody wants your stuff, said Forbes magazine, quoting Christian Science Monitor. As baby boomers begin to downsize, they're discovering their grown children don't want their stuff. In fact, they recoil in something close to horror at the thought of trying to find room for collections of Hummels and Thomas Kincaid paintings. So clearly talking about Christians here, because that's kind of stuff that Christians buy. A lot of people, why don't my kids want this? Why don't they want to take these things? Why aren't they as precious to them as they are to me? That's a good question. This particular article tries to answer it to a degree. Let's see if we can get some hints. We want to start and curate our own collections. We want to be surrounded by pieces that are curated to reflect. Now, I'm just going with the emphasis of the italics in the article. We want to be surrounded by pieces that are curated to reflect our travels, our memories, our ways of entertaining, and our personal styles. Doesn't that sound more self-focused than other-focused? It does to me. Doesn't it sound like there's less of an interest in loving the things that family loves because family is so important that you want those things because they're precious to you? You get them, and it's like, oh, this used to be in my grandpa's house. My grandparents, they had a clock that was handmade by my grandfather's uncle. And my grandfather, I remember he had to wind the thing every day with a key. And I can hear it ringing right now. And when my grandfather died at the age of 104, we all had our eyes on that clock. Was it worth a fortune?
I doubt it. Why did we want it? It's because it was my grandparents. And it every time we got together, it rang in the background and it was a memory. Doesn't seem to matter as much anymore. From the apartment therapy article, like many younger to middle-aged Americans, we don't want to have to pay movers, buy the box, or rent storage units by the month to be able to just pass on the things hoarded and left behind by others. We'd rather tell their stories or show a picture of them without having to actually live with and deal with and pay for keeping all, period, that, period, stuff, period. This seems to be a trend. What's behind it? Well, we can speculate what's behind it. It seems, I'm just speculating, and this isn't definitive, that maybe family and memories, they aren't as precious to this particular generation. I can't speculate about them, but I can ask, what does this say about us if it breaks our heart that they don't want our stuff? Maybe, just maybe, if we are a part of this trend, we need to remember just that. Ultimately, I want them loving me a whole lot more than I want them loving my stuff, because after all, it's just stuff. This is Wretched Radio. Please, would you please consider sending as many Bibles as you can through Bible League International to the persecuted church?
Aria was raised in a strict Muslim family. A woman invited her to a Bible study. She accepted Jesus as Lord and Savior. She took her Arabic New Testament home. She hid it. Her mother was rummaging through the house, found this, gave it to her father. He called the authorities to report her as an infidel. They tortured her, did the same thing to the Christian friend. These two women have been instrumental through their suffering to lead about 50 people to Christ.
And they would love a Bible. Would you please consider sending as many as you are able to through Bible League International? $5 for a Bible to a persecuted Christian. Perhaps 6 per month? Wretched.org/Bible, Wretched.org/Bible.
It was the great reformer Martin Luther who said, "I can give you 95 reasons to buy Wretched resources." Wretched's Reformer Sale. It's going on June 14th through the 16th. Tons of resources have been marked down. Books, DVDs, gospel booklets, and a whole lot more. And the best part? With every purchase, you'll receive a free On the Shoulders of Giants by Reformer wannabe Todd Friel. This is an amazing sale, but don't take my word for it. John Calvin proclaimed, "It's been foreordained before the foundation of the world that you will buy these Wretched resources." Mark your calendars, because the sale only lasts 3 days. And whether you're Presbyterian or not, you should heed the words of John Knox, who said, "Give me Wretched resources or I die." Wretched's Reformers Sale, 3 days only, June 14th through the 16th. Just visit wretched.org/sale. That's wretched.org/sale.
Lisa's a full-time nurse. On the weekend, she was running a pregnancy clinic in the highest abortion neighborhood in the United States, Queens, New York. More babies killed than there are born in this place. And she was raising the money on her own, and it's only open 1 day a week.
We could change that. There could be a pro-life center open 7 days a week, providing free ultrasounds for women by supporting preborn.org/wretched.
Preborn is very intentional and deliberate in providing free, loving, gospel-centered alternatives and ultrasounds to these young women in New York City. We're on it, man. It's not easy, and it's probably going to get a lot harder, I think.
Please join preborn.org/wretched in their effort to save babies and to save mommies through the gospel and stop this cycle. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org/wretched? preborn.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Physician. Jesus healed many physical ailments during his ministry on earth. When he comes again, he will put an end to death and disease and give us spiritual bodies to last for eternity.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Fancy that. This is Wretched Radio. So, Mr. Mandolin Player, you don't agree with everything I said.
No, I don't.
All right, what? What? Well, what?
You know, I think, for instance...
Hey, look at the time. We've got to get to the mailbag now. Thank you very much for sending stuff to idea@wretched.com. Okay, what? What's the big one?
I think it's the battle against... You talk about hoarding, and yeah, I agree with the question, or you asking, like, is there some disdain in that question? But at the same time, you look at just how many storage units are going up.
Oh, I agree. We did that. Believe me, we went through this exercise. We have downsized, and so we took a look at the stuff that the kids didn't want, thinking, well, maybe they'll want it some year. Maybe when they have children, they'll want that big thing. So we'll put it in storage. So we called up a storage unit. You're right. That's a sign of America, isn't it? We got a lot of stuff. We got more stuff than what our domicile can actually contain. So we got to go rent extra space to put things that we aren't presently using. That's America, baby. So we called up the storage unit. If you own one of those, good on you. Because, wow, they aren't cheap. So we started adding it up fast. And it's like, there is no way that we are going to... If I recall, it was like the smallest one was, I think, give or take, about $80 a month. To store stuff nobody wants. Not on your tin type, Missy. So I get that point too, Joey. I truly do. But the attitude behind it is it's not really so much about storage. And I don't even know that it's for this generation the expense as much as I just don't want the hassle. It isn't worth it to me. Now, it wasn't worth it to me because we wanted to get rid of the stuff anyway. But it wasn't even worth it to our kids. They were like, nah, don't want it. I if you raised your kids in a Christian home and they're behaving in some ways where you see at least little glimpses of postmodernism, and don't be surprised. No generation is immune to the effects of the world. None. No generation escapes it. You can raise up your kid. Every generation does this, I think. They look at the generation that has come after them and they go, what, they don't like Benny Goodman? What? I don't get it. How come they don't like the Benny Goodman? And they're into the Duran Duran. Why is this happening? What's matter with these kids these days? And now we look at it and we go, can't believe they're not into the Duran Duran and they're into that angry sounding, yelling music. I guess they call it music still. The Urban Dictionary should come up with a new word for it because I think the word music should be a bit offended based on some of the claptrap that is being produced these days. We wonder, we scratch our heads. Don't scratch them too hard. Every generation feels the effects of their culture, no matter how you raise them. And that actually brings us to a number of emails that we received here at idea@wretched.org. Was it, I guess, earlier this week, we had a conversation about George Whitefield. An article was written asking whether or not George Whitefield was a Christian. We talked about it, I think, in depth. Saying we got to be kind of careful when we're talking about the state of the salvation of a man who lived over 200 years ago, who did an awful lot of theological good, who was also influenced by his times, and yet we don't want to use the he's a man of his times to simply dismiss any bad behavior from anybody who preceded us. Well, he was just a man of his time. Well, they lived in Nazi Germany, so they were influenced. You don't want to give a complete pass. And yet, a fair and balanced historian recognizes that culture does get in. It seeps in. It does affect you. And I think we need to remember that as we go about being Christians who understand history, and as we take a look at some of our forefathers, forget the conversations that they're having about the Confederacy and Robert E. Lee should or shouldn't have a statue. We Christians have these issues to deal with. We've got people we esteem. You go to Geneva, and you've got the, what do they call the reformers? There's a name for it. I'm sure Steve Lawson would know it. In fact, if he's listening to this, which I'm absolutely certain he's not, he would just be rolling his eyes violently right now. But where you've got all of the great reformers with their statues. But if you take a look at the lives of the great reformers, there's some stuff where you'd go, huh? What's up with that?
We don't want to have chronological snobbery, for starters, thinking that we are just, oh, we're so much better, because I would like to suggest to you, conversely, if George Whitefield, or if you want to criticize Calvin for having an attitude that said, of course a heretic should be killed, not brutally, but yes, it's fine to have a heretic put to death, I wonder how they'd criticize us. Yes, Martin Luther was virulently anti-Semitic at the end of his life. You can't. He wrote a book on it. Now, by the way, some people have been sending me, I haven't done enough studying on it yet. So don't take this to the bank. No, but they were saying because of the Talmud, which is a book of teachings spanning centuries, their claim is Martin Luther was reading the Talmud near the end of his life, and it has some anti-Christian and anti-Christ sentiments in it. Therefore, that's what, if you will, triggered him to write those things. Okay, let's just say that's true of the Talmud. I don't know if it is. I still have to research that. It's still no excuse. Having said that, the attitude toward people groups back then, radically different than ours today. It was just different. We are, even when I was a kid, it was different. You used to make jokes about different ethnic groups. Today, you don't. You can't. Now, that's a change, and you've got to recognize in history that those influences, they make their way into our thinking. What would Martin Luther, John Calvin, and George Whitefield say about the way you and I do church? What would they say about the way we dress? What would they say about the way we raise and discipline our children? What would they say about the entertainment that we consume? If we took history in reverse, let's just say that time were backwards and Calvin and Luther and Whitefield were judging us and the state of our souls based on cable TV alone and what we consume. Well, I don't watch anything R-rated. Okay, but the stuff that we watch, let's be honest, I can't help but think, if you were sitting next to Calvin on a couch, first of all, he wouldn't be eating any of the snack food. He was a skinny fellow. But I wonder if he would be going, you're going to blanch at this, but I wonder if Calvin would go, why are you watching American Idol? Because his standard would be so much different than ours, and he might be just shocked and appalled that we watch such garbage. So we want to be a little careful about criticizing people from other generations and very aware that our generation is so influential on us. Many people have brought up the abortion issue. What will generations in the future say about our attitude toward abortion? Now, many of us pro-life. Many of us support preborn.org, which you should too, preborn.org/wretched, so that we get the ultrasound machines cranked up so that babies get saved, the gospel gets preached to them. By the way, it was Jeremy who just picked up a case full of Don't Stub Your Toe to put them into the lobbies of preborn clinics so that people can read the gospel while they're waiting. Okay, so we're engaged in the battle, and yet future generations might look back and go, and yet they lived in a country where there were abortuaries in their neighborhood? Those people, were they even Christian? Got to remember that. History is not as easy as we make it sound. And we got to be really careful about how we go about judging people. Received several emails sent to idea@wretched.org. Now, this one is from Greg. One, we should assume that everyone who claims to be a Christian is in good standing with the Lord unless there is overwhelming evidence otherwise. They reject the veracity of Scripture, the deity of Christ, confessing another God entirely. So the question of Whitefield's salvation is not even a point of contention for me, because I'm in no place to evaluate his confession of faith. Slavery is not an essential doctrine. But if it's a sin, an ongoing sin that's not repented of, that can be a problem. The problem with slavery is the understanding of slavery has varied in different eras. And there are things that, look, I'm not saying that the chattel slavery of America was right. I'm not even coming close to saying that, because that is the issue. The slavery in Bible days, different. The Old Testament, it lays out rules. It doesn't condemn slavery because that institution doesn't necessarily have to be sinful. But the slavery of the Old Testament was there's an opportunity to go free. There's no man-selling. You don't look at them as chattel, and you certainly don't mistreat and abuse them. And that pretty much summarizes American slavery. So the Bible, you're right, it doesn't condemn slavery out of hand, just totally, categorically. It depends on which institution of slavery you're talking about. And I think the positive reports from Whitfield's slaves should weigh on this. So how did Whitfield treat his slaves? Well, he tried to educate them. He started schools for slaves. All that to say, as we go about the business of studying characters in history, we got to do it very, very carefully. This is Wretched Radio.
Know your church fathers. Polycarp was a disciple of the Apostle John and the Bishop of Smyrna. He was a staunch defender of orthodoxy, combating the Gnostic heresies. Before his death as a martyr, Polycarp proclaimed, 86 years I have served Christ, and he has done me no evil. How could I curse my King who saved me? This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Idea@wretched.org. Idea@wretched.org. This is Wretched Radio. Let's get to your emails, shall we? Would like to complete the one I just began that was sent in by Greg talking about Whitfield slavery, American slavery, first century slavery. And received another email from somebody asking, when I read the Bible, I don't see that God is against slavery. Well, define slavery. That's the issue here. Define slavery. If I said to you the word exercise, you'd go, well, that's a good word. If I said, I have my children exercise, you'd think, oh, well, that's good. But what if my type of exercise, I've got them running with 50-pound boulders strapped to their shoulders up a mountain without any water? You'd go, that's wicked. You can call it exercise, but that's wicked. Slavery is an institution that can be sinful, as we see in American slavery, or not. Many people, Old Testament, New Testament slavery, where Paul doesn't do... Now, Paul's understanding of slavery clearly is that it's not the best institution. That's why he says, if you can go free, go take it. Go for it. Become a free man, because that's better than being in slavery. But that doesn't mean that slavery is wrong, especially if you're in that system because of debt, which many people were. They couldn't pay a debt, so they worked it off. And so understanding what slavery was in its time when the Bible was being written, kind of important that we understand that, and then that we understand what American chattel slavery was when people like Edwards and Whitfield were pro-slavery. There's a difference. So back to this question, what is the biblical understanding of slavery? Well, again, they should be offered their freedom. We don't own them. There's no man-selling, and there's good treatment thereof. It can be a livable institution. I've said this before. If somebody rang your doorbell, and they were starving, and they had no way to survive, they were going to die. There was not a welfare safety net available to them. There they are, Christian. Are you going to say, nope, I can't do that? Or might you say, I'll tell you what, you look able-bodied. I'll feed you. I'll let you have the basement, the bed, whatever. You've got one of those, house attached to your house, whatever that is. That's the word I'm looking for right there.
Carriage house.
Ooh, that sounds even fancier. You stay there. In exchange, you will mow the lawn, trim, edge, shovel the snow, because clearly this scenario is in Minnesota, and you will be responsible for keeping the garage clean and changing the oil in the vehicles. Is that wicked? You'd go, well, that seems fair. You cut a deal with them. Bingo. That's what much of slavery, they were in debt. They couldn't, okay, you want to pay it off? Or they had to take a role as a slave because they would die otherwise, because that's the way the system was back then. God condemned poor treatment. God condemned thinking of them as just something you own, that they're property. And he condemned the idea of man-selling clearly. So there were regulations on it, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a wicked institute. It can, and it was in American slavery into the 19th century. Now, back to the article that was sent, or the letter that was sent in from Greg. And he brings out some points that I think we just need to consider with Whitfield. He writes, I try to put myself in Whitfield's position and analyze what I would do. Okay. It's 1780. Slavery is legal. You, let's just say, were born into a family that had a plantation and that owned slaves. Wrongly. But there you are. You're born into that. Now you take over the farm. You take over the plantation. What are you going to do? Because you realize, if I just set them free, we're living here in Georgia. We're in Alabama. Where are they going to go? What happens if they're captured? What happens if they're taken in by somebody who is cruel? They're not educated. They don't have GPS. They'll die or be horribly mistreated. Would you potentially keep them? No. Look, I'm not walking a mile in anybody's shoes from 200 years ago, but there are considerations before we go about the business of condemning. And please note, because I've really been talking about one side of this issue, you can certainly understand why somebody who maybe hasn't processed history in this manner, or they haven't considered these things, or they haven't done a study of biblical slavery, what it means, the implications, the rules, how American slavery violated it, that they, and because of ancestry, they might just go, no! It's wicked. There's no way. We can get that, can't we? And we can still love one another and talk about these things without going to the mattresses, can't we? I think we can. I hope so. If I knew, this is Greg again, that abusive men who hate God are showing up at these auctions to destroy their fellow man, I don't know what I would be able that I would be able to refrain from trying to buy some of those individuals to ensure that they are treated kindly and hear the gospel. You think that sounds preposterous? I don't think it is. There were auction blocks. They really did exist. People were really sold there. They were examined there. They were humiliated there. And they were going to cruel people who abused them for generations. What would you do? Well, now you're a slave. You bought those people to rescue them. Yeah, but I didn't do it to own us. Okay. And we don't know what Whitfield's story was. It does seem to be a little bit cloudy. Would it have been good for Whitfield to release his slaves given the cultural stance against black people? Were his slaves not safer under his household? Again, history, it ain't so simple. This is from Daniel. I sometimes like to think about how the past Christians, like the Puritans, would think about Christians today. What would they say about us and our version of Christian behavior? Would they condemn us? Well, if they weren't aware that society changes, culture changes, anything that is sinful is forever sinful, but there are some cultural issues that do indeed make their way into the Christian experience, that make it manifest itself in different ways, which, by the way, is one of the beautiful things about the Bible. It doesn't strap us into one particular century. And speaking of culture and how it impacts us, we talked, I believe it was this week, about head coverings for women. And I will say this again, so grateful. Many people responded to that. And I don't think one of them was a jerk about it. It wasn't like, okay, knucklehead, let me tell you why women should be wearing head. They just respectfully disagreed, and so do I. That's all. We've got a difference of opinion on the issue. Many people responding, because it seems so clear in 1 Corinthians 11 that it's tied to the creative order. And I get that. And that's why I'm very sympathetic to it. And I will even confess to you, I could be wrong about this issue. I could. Because the text is not clear cut either way. Furthermore, you've got the history of the church. Women wore head coverings for a long time in Christianity for going to church. And it wasn't all the time, but for going to church. Now, that morphed into pretty hats, but nevertheless, that's why you saw Easter bonnets, because it was just a more celebratory manifestation of the head covering rule in 1 Corinthians 11. Nevertheless, I respect those people. I don't think that they were dunderheads. And so I could be wrong on the issue. I don't think I am. But, there's another one. 200 years. For whatever reason, it becomes crystal clear. I know this is hard to imagine because you currently think you're right, but that is the point of all of this. Whitfield thought he was right about slavery, apparently. You think that a woman doesn't have to wear a head covering to go to church. What if in 200 years they're like, of course. Can you believe that those people in 2019, that they didn't wear a head covering? Can you believe? What? Were they? Was there even an actual church then? Were there any Christians then? We wouldn't really like that now, would we? So I think we both have to hold on to our side lovingly. You can argue for it tenaciously as long as it's loving. And everybody who sent in an email did that very thing. Remember the one line that we focused on. There's more consideration, but the one line in 1 Corinthians 11, besides the creative order, is, doesn't nature say that a woman should have her hair covered? Her head covered? Okay, question. Where do you find that? Where does nature tell you that? It doesn't. You can't come up. Limited revelation in nature. You don't have. Would you by this day, women should only wear dresses that come down to their ankles? You'd go, well, no, there's no verse that says that in nature. Right. So how do we harmonize the creative order and nature? Well, when we in society come up with norms, if you go against those norms, you feel kind of like, I'm going against the created, because a man is supposed to act like this and a woman is supposed to act like that. Therefore, the conclusion of many is it was a societal, cultural issue locked into that church at that time in that century. And if you disagree, love you too. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us today. Always appreciate when you spend part of your day listening to Wretched Radio. Two things for you today. First off, the Wretched Reformer Sale is going on now. Today through Sunday, 3 days only, tons of resources have been marked down. Check it out, if you would, at wretched.org/sale. Secondly, and you know this, 2019 is the year of our millennial initiative, looking to reach out to a very lost and anxious generation with the gospel. Part of our initiative is getting the content where the millennials are. They're not watching TV like the old days. They're on their phones. So we're developing the app and looking to get on more streaming services, putting more content on our social media platforms to reach this generation. And if you don't already, please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're able, support Wretched and our millennial initiative. Go to wretched.org/donate and become a gospel partner. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
So, you don't think that your sponsorship of a Tomorrow Club is worth it, huh?
One of the kids that came, you know, her parents were both alcoholics. The leader said, why don't you invite your mother to come? She started coming and she'd hear little pieces of the gospel and she started drinking a little bit less and started coming to the church, and the church started trying to help them. And believe it or not, even the father stopped drinking and the whole family has come to the Lord. Now this family operates the Tomorrow Club.
These stories are happening all over Eastern Europe. Poor villages, the Tomorrow Clubs invade. They meet with the kids every week. They disciple them. They preach the gospel to them. They have them memorize Bible verses. The kids get saved. The parents get saved. And the local church gets strengthened. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 little disciples. You can do that at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched. tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Obeying the Great Commission has never been easier. So far, you've given away over 200,000 copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? And we couldn't be more thrilled with that number. Well done. But we are far from finished. Not to be greedy, but our goal is to give away 1 million copies of What Time is Purple. Perfect for college students struggling to find out what the truth is. Visit wretched.org/purple today and order as many copies as you promised to give away. You just pay for the shipping. And together, we can reach 1 million students with the gospel. 1 million. If you're a ministry or a church group that would like to pass out What Time is Purple, we'd love to send you a bunch of copies. Email Al Yerkes at al@wretched.org for more information. And join us in obeying the Great Commission. Visit wretched.org/purple for your copies of What Time is Purple today. That's wretched.org/purple.
Books of the Bible. 2 Timothy is Paul's last letter before his execution. He encourages Timothy to persevere amidst suffering. Paul had suffered for the sake of the gospel, but he also knew the beauty and power of the gospel. He charges Timothy to cling to and preach the gospel. When you face opposition, do not fear or be ashamed, but trust God and rely on his word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, thank you very much for sending, well, pretty much everything to idea@wretched.org, especially your questions, comments, conundrums, or snarks, idea@wretched.org. Let's get to it, shall we? No, we're not going to get to this one. We're saving this one for the end because it should be a joyous email that we all celebrate together. Dear Todd, I'm saved and being sanctified, and my husband is not. That is rough. This person writes, my new life has been difficult for my husband to wrap his brain around, and I want so desperately to help lead him to Christ. Okay, there's two big thoughts going on there. If you are an individual who is married as a pagan to a pagan, and now you got saved, and your spouse is acting weird or upset, angry, offended, we can understand that, can't we? When you said, I do, you were basically saying, I love this person more than anybody else on the planet, till death do us part. Introduce Jesus, who now takes that role. You can understand how somebody can really feel jilted, so we can be sympathetic about that. Second, you desperately want your spouse to get saved. How do you do that? Take the long view. I would suggest make sure that they understand the gospel and then spend your days not harping, haranguing, preaching to, trying to give them CDs. You can do that as much as you want to. But be the greatest spouse that you can be. That's what Peter encourages. Be an incredible spouse so that your unsaved spouse is going to ask, okay, tell me about, clearly you're a different person. I want to know. So take the long view and put your energies not into being frustrated or not into trying to constantly go, maybe this sermon from John MacArthur will get him saved. No, do that wisely. But spend your efforts trying to, both genders, being an amazing spouse that they might be one to the Lord. There's a third question in here. Since the husband is supposed to be the leader of the home, how do I go about helping my husband spiritually when I'm supposed to be submitting to his leadership in the home? You can't, because he's not. But you can be a great godly spouse who leads him to the Lord. There's an article at rickthomas.net on this very subject that would be helpful for you. How does a spouse in this situation do this? Well, you can't expect your spouse to be taking you through a Bible reading program. You can't expect your spouse to be teaching you theology. You can't expect your spouse to be going to church. And it's not there. But you can be still submitting and leading them to the Lord. And that means then rightly understood submission, and it might not be the best type of submission when the spouse isn't saved if he's not a godly man, but submitting. Yep, okay, that's the plan. As long as it's not forcing you to sin, going along with it, you can be leading him to the Lord. Final thought on this. If you're dating somebody and you're a Christian and they're not saved, you are just knock, knock, knocking on a great big door behind which stands a big monster called trouble. You want heartache? You keep dating that unsaved person. Then you just keep giving your heart, giving, well, maybe when we get saved or when we get married, she'll get saved. Maybe. But you're commanded to not be unequally yoked. And this is one of the reasons. It is very, very challenging. Todd writes, Jeff, what does the Bible say about designer babies? Genetically engineering babies to either ward off disease or to increase intelligence. I think it's very problematic, but I think that we still want to examine what we mean by designer babies. I think any time that you're getting involved in the life process, any time that you're getting involved in making the death process faster, you shouldn't be expediting death. You shouldn't be making it go quicker. You shouldn't be causing death. You shouldn't be a doctor who gives somebody a shot. That's called murder. Not death with dignity. You're playing God when you do those things. It is his job to determine death date and birth date and to design the child in the womb. But now we've got these technologies that allow for human beings to get involved in that knitting together. Might I suggest, as a rule, we should be entirely concerned about it and denouncing it when it is nothing more than, you want a kid who play? Here's, please, fill out this paperwork while you're in the waiting room. Do I want my child to play the piano, throw a football, or be a chess master? Can I pick more than one? Oh, just one. All right. Do I want
check
my child
all that
to be
apply
really tall, medium, high? I think that we condemn all of that nonsense. That's God's business to dole that stuff out. Having said that, could it be that medicine in this instance could be a blessing if, I'm going to create a scenario, if you've got a husband and wife, it has been determined scientifically that if they have a child, this will happen to the child. They will have a disease. They will be sick. Their life, they won't survive. Would we be opposed to these geneticists being able to root that out, manipulate it, so that the child isn't born with that trait, that genetic code, or with that disposition to a disease? Would we be opposed to that? And I think the answer is not necessarily. Isn't that what medicine does? It cures people? So if you could get in front of it, we don't think, should a Christian get chemotherapy to save them from cancer? I don't know. Is that playing God? We go, no, that's a blessing from God. Could we look at this the same way in those, what I suspect will be rare instances? So, Jeff, designer baby business, as a rule, bad territory for a human being to play in. That belongs to God alone. Could it possibly be a blessing? Could. Possibly. Joey, you're going to remind me when you'll let me know when we've got 2 minutes left, okay?
Okay.
All right. 2 minutes left. Todd writes, I'm leaving the name out. I hope you can do a series on speech inside the home, especially fathers or mothers or husbands and wives who claim to be Christians yet unapologetically drop the F-bomb, use words like shut up, moron, beep, boop, beep. Nope, I will not do a series. Instead, I would encourage you to run to Ephesians 4:28 and read it through Ephesians 5:3 or 4. The Christian mouth is different. And if you just say to the other person, hey, quit being a potty mouth. Well, okay, that might work. Or you can take them right to the word and say, Christians talk differently. We have a higher standard. We don't speak like the world. Now, we recognize that words can change their meaning over time. But if there's any risk that I am using a word that can be perceived as being coarse, crude, inappropriate, or lowly, not for the Christian. Oh, hold on. I've got to find this. Ah, I wanted to make sure we got this, too. Still got 2 minutes, right, Joseph? This is sent in from Anonymous because this person is a law enforcement officer. This is regarding CBD oil, which we spoke about earlier this week on Wretched. Just for whatever this is worth, most state laws who have legalized CBD oil have made it so it's legal. So as long as the THC, that's the addictive buzz content, is lower than 0.3% or less. Here's the problem. He writes, many companies claim their products are pure, alluding to the THC content, when they're not. I'm a law enforcement officer. I'm aware of other officers who have purchased CBD oil to have it tested to verify those claims and determine it was, they determined it was far higher than the legally allowed 0.3%. I am told there's only one manufacturer that is truly pure with no THC. You can hear our entire comments on that. You should simply be aware of that. Now then, we got 2 minutes,
Joseph.
Mr. Benny. Hello. Since none of us knows what day or what time Christ is coming back in the clouds to take his own to heaven, so what if during that time we are sinning and we don't have time to repent? Can we still go to heaven? Many times I think of this. I'm a mother of a two-year-old girl. My temper has changed. I get angry. And while I might yell out of frustration, and during that time I might say a curse word, I regret it and repent. But what if Christ comes back during the time when I say those words and I don't have time to repent? My dear sister, let me just scream joyfully to you, all of your sins, past, present, and future, are forgiven. Nailed to a tree, Colossians 2. Your record, gone. It has been given to Jesus Christ, and he has given you his resume. You can almost be certain, Christian, that you are going to be sinning when Jesus returns, even if it is simply not loving him with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But God's grace is greater than your sin. Of course you don't want it. This news shouldn't cause you to go, oh, then no problem. I can be looking at porn. So what if Jesus comes back? You don't want to be caught doing that. But if you're sinning when Jesus returns or you die, the Bible trumpets to you all of your sins, past, present, future, forgiven by Jesus Christ, who died for you while you were yet and are continuing to sin. That's why it's called good news indeed. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.